Hi, everybody. My name is Mike King. I'm an insurance broker. I'm a partner at Caprice AMW Insurance, and we're privileged to be in partnership with the NSEF in the delivery of a bunch of insurance, a lot of insurance products to members of NSEF and coaches that are members of NSEF and facilities that operate in the province of Nova Scotia, and of course elsewhere across Canada. I'm situated here in Aurora, Ontario, where we have had a very different experience with COVID-19 than many other jurisdictions in the country. Some of them good, some of them not so good. In fact, I was just saying to Heather Meyer just a moment ago that here in Ontario, although parts of the province went to phase two about a week or 10 days ago, the county in which I live, which is just outside of the Toronto area, only got phase two endorsement today at about 3 o'clock. So I'm very excited. I don't really know what it means yet. I'll have to run home and watch the news like everybody does every night, trying to learn the impact of government's authority over us and where we stand in the process. But I suspect that what it means is that our social circles are going to be able to expand beyond that which they have been since March the 18th, which was five. So now I think we're going to get to 10, which is great news for us. Now, Nova Scotia, I know that it's a little bit different. I know that you've gone to phase two in most areas in the province, that the phase two, frankly, that's in Nova Scotia is slightly different than it is in New Brunswick or PEI or Ontario or elsewhere. And this has been one of the great challenges for us as risk managers, is trying to evaluate the impact of insurance coverages as they may exist in Nova Scotia versus New Brunswick versus PEI versus Ontario and all the provinces across the country, because they are variable. In some provinces, Emergency Act, so actual legislation, is overriding all of this. In other areas, it's regulation, which is a different impact in terms of liability. So today, as Heather alluded to at the outset, we're going to talk a little bit about where we are today, where we think we're going as far as the horse industry and how insurance coverages are going to be impacted by that. And so I'll start with coaches, I suppose, because that's perhaps the biggest area where we become involved in the industry, where we're relying very heavily on coaches in all disciplines and parts of the industry to be very careful risk managers when they're teaching riding. And certainly over these last few months, there's been real challenges in being a coach, even more so than usual, in trying to manage a whole range of social distancing issues, and managing personal protective equipment for themselves, allowing customers to come into their place of business, which frankly is an overriding theme today. And that is, how do business managers and horsemen and women across the industry engage, or continue to engage, or begin to engage perhaps with their clients, so that their businesses can sort of get back to activity. And we'll get to horse shows and so forth in a few minutes, but let's talk about that coach environment, which very often is a one-on-one environment. And as we've said hundreds, if not thousands of times now in previous conversations and in email correspondence and all manner of things, that frankly, the guidance for what that looks like in terms of that interaction, that customer-facing environment, is not up to an insuring company. It's up to the health and health authorities and government in your local community to advise on what the PPE, the personal protective equipment, should be, the use of sanitization for yourself and for your staff and for your customer, for that matter. We've all had to learn this whole skill set about or surrounding sanitation and the use of masks, which are now are being widely encouraged. And you know, who would have thought 6 months ago we'd be talking about masks like it was putting on a shirt or a jacket? But ultimately, it's as people leave their house in the morning, myself included, it's, where's my cell phone, where are my car keys, and where's my mask? And it's really quite astounding to me how the entire planet has adapted to this very new normal in a very short period of time. And you know, those of us in the horse industry are not exceptional, as much as we like to think we are. The reality is that we have the same responsibilities as everyone else does in society to protect ourselves and our customers and the people that we interact with during this pandemic, because it is a global issue. And I can't stress that enough, that we have to really go slowly as we move forward in activity. And that's clearly the message that we're hearing from all provinces, from all health authorities, from all government officials. It is a nonpartisan issue. It's not intended to be prejudicial on any one sector or beneficial to any one sector particularly. It's about all of us doing our part to try and keep the numbers down, which frankly is frightening to me. We've become all too numb when we think about the number of folks that have been affected by COVID-19, some losing their lives. I mean, it's not just a few. I mean, it's hundreds of thousands of people that have already lost their lives to this deadly pandemic. So it's important to sort of engage in this conversation from that context so that when we do come out of our shell, when we get out of our bubbles, when we expand our social circles, which I'm excited to be able to be doing today, when we talk to our customers about how we're going to interact with them moving forward, it's a very different conversation. And I want to stress that from my point of view, this is not about recovery to what was. This is about change and recognizing that we have to adapt in this new environment. The new normal, as they call it, is something very new. It's not normal at all. It's something very new. It's not like going back. We can't pretend that we're going to be teaching riding in the same way that we did before. We're going to have to be very sensitive and cognizant to protect ourselves and our customers from the potential of putting the whole environment at risk. So how do we do those things? And as a facility manager, it's no different a question, it's just broader. It's about really seriously considering the risks associated with all parts of your business, which now include the potential presence of COVID-19 in your space. I have to do it here as an insurance broker. It's no different for me, or it's no different for the restaurant or the place of business that we're all consuming in our day-to-day work, our day-to-day lives, the grocery store, the doctor's office. All those spaces are now evaluating risk beyond that which they knew before. It's not about how much salt is on the driveway in the icy storm anymore. It's about the salt on the driveway in the icy storm and COVID-19. It's about all those things that we've known before, but adding this risk assessment for COVID-19 and being educated about it. Because frankly, the courts are going to be very harsh on any business operator who is not diligent and is not vigilant in making sure the people that interact with them are kept safe to the best of their ability. I don't think any court would expect that I or Roz or Heather or anybody else on this call or any of you are medical experts, because we're not. That's not our thing. So we're going to approach this risk with guidance that frankly is being widely provided to us, whether it's from local health authorities, whether it's from the government and paying attention to the news, by not staying on Facebook, frankly, and taking all kinds of rumors and nonsense off social media platforms, but relying upon credible sources like the NSCF. And I'm not saying that in any patronizing way. The NSCF has done a masterful job. I mean, a masterful job of providing a resource for a number of things related to COVID-19, some of which are by their own design, some of which are being provided by Equestrian Canada as a national sport organization, some of which are being provided from other resources that they know of, that they've gathered and accumulated and made solely and freely available to everyone who wants to look and see. And I can't encourage you enough to engage with the NSCF as that resource, because it's credible information, folks, and it's horse specific. It's about being sensitive to those things that exist in your business. So there's the dissertation that took about 7 minutes, which it wasn't supposed to, but it sort of did. So we've talked about coaching just a little bit, but here's some of the things that I'm hearing from coaches that are actually engaged in the activity now and how they've changed their activity and changed their operation. And one of the things they've recognized is that perhaps to keep their customers more comfortable, they're actually wearing a mask when the lesson starts, when they have to get in close to their students and not maintain that social distance, because they have to adjust the girth, they have to adjust the stirrups, they have to help someone understand how to sit up straight and put their hand on their back and all the things that are just part of being a riding instructor. They have to sort of recognize that those decisions to interact very closely, which are sort of reflex in previous times, are now something that have to be stopped, paused, think about what that interaction looks like, try to decide whether a mask or gloves or sanitization is necessary, which you will be required to do and the courts will expect you to do and your insurer certainly expects you to do. Government and health authorities expect you to do, and frankly, your client expects you to do. The other thing that I want to say about coaching is this, and it was an interesting conversation I've had. I may have said this on previous Zooms with NSCF members, but I'll say it again. When we were back in the thick of it, and for some, we're still very much in the thick of it, some are deciding, frankly, not to coach at the moment, despite the pressures that are coming from all places around them. And part of the reason that they're not comfortable with it is because they don't understand COVID-19 well enough to be able to evaluate and manage the risk. And you know what, folks? It's okay, because frankly, it's all new to all of us. Others are saying, I don't want to interact with customers because I've got an older parent at home. I've got a child or a spouse or somebody in my life who's compromised, and I don't want to put them at risk because of my sort of overt desire to get back into business or to interact with people outside of my circle, outside of my social network, where I'm just a little nervous about that. And again, it's okay, because frankly, the person you have to take care of first is yourself. You're no good to anybody if you're sick. You certainly don't want to be making family members sick by interacting quite inadvertently or quite occasionally with a client or a student who may have been somewhere else. So all of those things are quite acceptable in my opinion. The other thing that I've heard from coaches is, you know, I'm good with the social distancing. After all, I'm standing in the middle of the ring. People are capable of tacking up their own horses, or tacking up the school horse, or they're riding their own animal. I don't typically get in that close contact environment with them. So the question I pose to the coach is this, and I want you all to think about this. I'm the student. I'm an old guy. And so I'm in the corner, and you've told me to post on the left lead or canter on the left lead or lope on the left lead, whatever it might be. Horse takes a bad step. I come off. I'm a pile of rubble in the corner. You prepared to rush in? You prepared to provide first aid that I require? If you are going to do that, are you prepared to protect yourself and me in that very close environment? You'd be surprised how many coaches that I've spoken with had to stop and really think about that for a moment. They had to remember that that is ultimately their responsibility, because they are responsible legally and socially and morally for the entire environment. And if they're hesitating at all because of COVID-19, my advice to them, frankly, as a risk manager, is don't coach, because that is very much a reality that we have to engage with now. So those are sort of some of the scary sides of this thing that we can't help but speak about. And I'm not trying to intimidate anybody, but I'm just trying to plant ideas in your mind to just consider this as being a very new environment, because it is. You may be the most consummate professional on the planet in terms of your equine abilities, your ability to communicate, basic instruction, or do the things that you do, or train horses with people in the tack. That's all very good. We expect you to be credentialed. We expect you to be engaged in the industry and truly professional in your demeanor, but this is now something new that you're going to have to do. So same thing for facility operators. Allowing boarders to come on the property has sort of been managed now. People are starting to figure out scheduling of how many people on the property, considering the implications of safety and health of their staff, of themselves, of their boarders. Saying to boarders, you know what, for the foreseeable future, you can come and see your horse on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays between 10 o'clock and 11 o'clock, and you got to get out of Dodge. You got to get off my property because so-and-so is coming between 12 and 1, and I've got to have an opportunity to keep the place clean, to do all those things that are extraordinarily different from what they were before, to keep the schedule sort of consistent. You'll be given access to your animal. You'll be able to do the things that you want to do, but you're going to do it on my terms as the boarding place. The boarding contract that I have with you speaks to the care of your horse. It does not give you unfettered access to my premises or to the environment in which I live and my family live and my staff work or other boarders are visiting. Those things are outside of the parameters of that boarding agreement. So please respect the boundaries in which I operate my business, because that's very important. And by the way, government and health authorities will support the facility in those environments, because again, they're providing the guidance. They're the ones that are saying you should be washing your hands umpteen times a day and wearing masks when you can, socially distance and sanitizing surfaces that are common contact surfaces, which is a huge problem on facilities. So controlling access and where people go and how they go on or move around on the property is now just, it needs to be a part of the risk management strategy. And I encourage everyone on this call to, again, as I said before, step back from their business as it exists, have a long, quiet think in your own brain about what all those risks are that embrace COVID-19, but are not limited to that. It's a great time to review other risk management practices that you should be engaging with in your business operations as an equine professional, and then moving forward cautiously, slowly, methodically, taking pause when you need to, reviewing those risk management practices as you need to, making sure you're current with what's going on in the news, not succumbing to pressure. When people say, I demand this or I demand that, too bad. I'm the business operator. I decide what you will do in my business. I can fire you as a customer and that's okay. I don't think that people are being unreasonable. Most folks are trying to be responsible in their demeanors, but horse people are not special beyond the rest of the global citizenry. We all have a responsibility to be good at what we do. So that's about facilities. That's about coaches. Horse shows, the last thing I'll talk about in there, and then we'll talk about risk forms and stuff. I know shows are coming on. We've heard from show organizers across the country, some of which are looking for sanction from their PSO, like the NSCF, some of which are looking for sanctions from Equestrian Canada, some of which are looking for sanctions from their Breeder Discipline Association, and are saying, can I have my horse show? And the answer from an insurer's perspective is knock yourself out, as long as you're following guidance and regulations as provided by local health authority and local government. It's not for me to decide whether you run a horse show. It's not for me to decide any of that. It's up to local health authorities to determine the size of social gathering, how many folks can be on the premises at once, how you're going to manage the flow of traffic, horses, equipment, cars, whether you can provide food on site, how many porta potties you're going to need, and how often they're going to have to be sanitized. All those things that are now the new reality, and whether or not even that, with all those expenses and extra work that you have to do, whether or not the horse show is even viable. That's your decision, but how you manage that environment around COVID-19 is something you're going to have to get your head around. Again, I turn back to the NSCF and Equestrian Canada, who have provided massive documents. In fact, I was reading one over the weekend, fun times, a 42-page document, which is the guidance for return to activity, return to showing, as published by Equestrian Canada. And I have to tell you, it's brilliant. It's a great document. It doesn't say, if you do this, we'll do this. It just says, here's guidance. Here's information that they've got from WHO. Here's information that they've gotten from other jurisdictions, including FEI, to help them bring messaging to the Canadian industry to help the horse industry move forward. But again, I stress it's not going to be the way it was. Horse shows are going to have to consider all kinds of spatial distancing, how many folks on the grounds. All those things are going to be huge challenges as we move forward. I'm not hugely enthusiastic about how well horse shows might do this year or how many people are going to participate in horse shows. Not for me to decide or for me to judge, but I have to tell you, as a horseman, I would be reluctant to be going to what I thought might be a crowded horse show at this time. I would like to think that I'd be smart enough to review how much risk I'm prepared to take, knowing that I have other risks associated with being around this 1,000-pound critter, and how else I can enjoy the animal, perhaps outside of competition in the short term. Not saying I'm not going to come back to competition, not saying I'm not going to come to your horse show, not saying any of that, but saying I'm just not completely ready yet. And I think that that's a real issue. I've had some show organizers be smart enough to offer sort of the horse show idea out to their communities and saying, we'd like to take a poll. We'd like to say, if we do these things, will you even come to our horse show? Not surprisingly, the farther along we get in this process, the more people proportionally are prepared to take the risk, because there's some measure of trust in the risk management guidance, the risk management that's being presented by the show organizers, who are all learning this as a brand new skill set. That's all well and good. Now you have to execute. You've got to have COVID police on the ground. You can't expect an official who knows the rule book to be monitoring how often the porta potty's been wiped down during the day. Somebody's got to be responsible for that. Somebody's got to be responsible to say, you can't, that gaggle of 15-year-olds who invariably want to congregate at a horse show, you can't do that at this horse show. And if I see you doing that, the COVID police say, get off my property, because we don't want to be in trouble with local authorities. And we certainly don't want you to contract COVID-19 amongst yourselves, or take COVID-19 away from the horse show to another community that is not related to this farm, because those are really dangerous things to do. So again, it's a pragmatic approach. We have to be very careful how we get back to that activity and how we're going to manage that along the way. So it's kind of generic information, and I know that. So let's talk about forms, just the risk forms. Here's what I'll say about forms. Anyone on this call, anyone watching this Zoom presentation at some point, I got to tell you this, you can't rely on these risk forms as being so solid that they're going to stop someone from suing you. Anybody that believes that is naive. These forms are intended to be a tool in your risk management kit. Ask any lawyer whether or not these forms will stand up in court, and they will tell you the same thing that I'm about to say, and that is this. I don't know. They might. They might have an impact on the judgment. They might have no impact on the judgment. They're certainly not going to stop someone from suing you. What it is, what the reason that they are valuable tools is simply that we want people to be conscious of the risk. We want to be able to say in a court of law, standing figuratively beside you in front of the judge and jury, that I had the conversation with the participant. They willingly entered into the environment, understood the risks as best they could, signed a document to say that they did, and then participated in the activity. That's what we want to have happen. So, in terms of the validity of these forms, COVID-19 has not been tested in a court of law. No one on the planet, although there are lawsuits pending all over the place, make no mistake, there will be places of business in and outside of the horse industry that will be sued because someone will allege that someone caught COVID-19 at the facility, at the place of business, in the restaurant, in the grocery store, somewhere. And those facilities, those insurers that represent those facilities are going to have to defend it. When that process finally gets to court and finally gets to a superior court where a precedent might be set, depending on the circumstances, and it won't be specific to the claim, then other insurers will rely upon it or potentially rely upon it as being a point of reference to build their own forms, to build their own risk management, to build their own exclusions. And that's something that we need to talk about. Not all insuring companies are going to cover this. In fact, I would hazard a guess that very few, if any, will be covering COVID-19 in the short term. Even though some coverages may be in place today, we're fully anticipating across the industry that insurers, by and large, will withdraw coverage for pandemic or for contagious disease, simply because insurers rely upon the ability to underwrite risk, to analyze risk, and then charge a premium accordingly based on the potential of a claim and the severity of a claim. They can't do that with COVID-19 right now because it hasn't happened yet. So their immediate response to protect their own interests and their own billions of dollars is to exclude it. When those exclusions get challenged, when the courts start hearing cases, then insurers will start evaluating the risk from a scientific perspective, and then I fully anticipate the coverages will be available again. But that's not anytime soon. So it's important that you check with your insurer to make sure of the status of your coverage, whether or not if the incident occurred today, whether or not you'd have coverage, or if the incident's going to occur in September, October, will you have coverage then? Because frankly, the answers may be very different. So, Heather, I'm going to stop talking for a moment because I've been prattling on as I do. So why don't we talk just a little bit about a form? I'm looking for a form. It's the daily attestation and agreement form. Can you put that up? Great. Okay. Okay, that'll work. That's for an organization for a facility use waiver, and that's fine. So we'll start there. So, and I'll say to the group, this form and others like it, I borrowed these, legally, but these came from a lawyer. Faskin Lawyer is the name of the firm. And Faskin Lawyers are the same insuring companies that provide protection or legal services, rather, to the Canadian Olympic Committee. So they're obviously very involved in sport. I sat in on a webinar last week, as did people from Equestrian Canada and other disciplines, other sport across the country, to listen to some experts talk about these forms and the use of them. And I'm not going to read these things verbatim, but essentially there are several forms that they've developed as drafts, that they've developed as example forms that they feel might be appropriate risk management tools. This one speaks to facility use. So this one might be adopted by a boarding place, for instance, wherein the facility says to a boarder, you have to sign this acknowledgement of risk form, this waiver form, that says to me that you are understand that you may well contract COVID-19 on my facility, that I've done everything reasonable to protect you, that I'm acting reasonably as a business owner, but fundamentally I can't absolutely guarantee that you're not going to contract COVID-19 on my facility. And I need you to sign a piece of paper that says that. So that's what this form speaks to. And it's a very typical waiver where there are declarations of, I'll never sue you again. And I understand COVID-19, a communicable disease. Some will argue when they sign these forms that they don't understand communicable disease. They don't even understand the word communicable. They don't understand what COVID-19 is. That's an allegation that they may well make in the future. But as a facility owner, as a business operator, I still want the form signed. So, Heather, have we got another form that looks similar to that? that speaks to event participation. And these forms are going to be posted, by the way. These forms are actually, I believe, already on NSCF's website in the Equestrian Canada Return to Activity attachments.
Nope. Is this it, Mike?
Sure, that'll work. Okay. So here's one that's great for horse shows. But this actually might work for a number of activities participating in a clinic. And I want to bring your attention just to the following. You'll see the questions that are being asked. It says, by signing below the participant, name below, and or the participant's guardian, depending on their age, the age of the participant, has and sort of declares these things. And these questions, as we all know, are increasingly common now in our daily lives. In fact, these questions are posted on a sign outside of my local grocery store. And there's somebody sort of policing the door and saying, hey, did you read the sign? And they watch you read the sign. You don't have to read it out loud. You don't have to stamp it or sign it or anything, but they want you to acknowledge these things. And this is reasonable in my view. And it certainly was reasonable in the view of the lawyer. That as an event organizer, you have every right now to ask these questions and get an answer. So the way that we get the answer is by having the form signed. That you haven't been out of the country, that you don't have COVID-19 to the best of your knowledge, that you don't know anybody who has had COVID-19 or is suffering from symptoms. Those are very important elements of this whole notion of trying to protect you as the facility manager, as the organizer of the event, against the prospect of someone coming back and saying later, some later date, that they did in fact contract COVID-19 at your facility. So at the very least, there's a form that you can show up or your insurer will use, frankly, on your behalf to say, well, perhaps you did, perhaps you didn't, but you signed a form saying that you hadn't been out of the country. Can you prove to us that you haven't or that you didn't have symptoms? Because that will become very relevant in your defense. So again, it's about this form being a part of a risk management risk management practice, risk management strategy. It doesn't mean that you don't have to still sanitize every surface in the property. And, you know, for coaches, I should have mentioned this before, but frankly, there's some expectation that I've heard in the industry about sanitizing saddles and tack between uses in lesson programs. Difficult to do, hard on the tack, I get it, but what's the alternative? Because frankly, that's the expectation now. So this is important. The last one, Heather, if I can, is called a daily attestation.
Oh,
I think I sent you three.
Is that it there?
I can't see the title, sorry.
Okay, sorry. I put it up there, but it might not have worked. Okay, daily, there it is. There you go, Mike.
Okay, great. So this one is the last of the three forms that I think are appropriate. And this one speaks to a daily attestation or declaration from the participant. So you're running a 2-day horse show. This form should be signed both days. You're running a lesson program. This form should be signed every time the kid comes to the barn. It's an important element of this. We all know that COVID-19, like all other sickness, can be contracted any time. I mean, I'm healthy as a horse today, pardon the pun. Tomorrow I might come down with symptoms related to COVID-19, but I enter your premises today in good faith. I can say in good faith that I don't have a fever, I don't have a cough, I don't have shortness of breath. Tomorrow I come back to the horse show and I feel like, you know what? And I can't sign the form. So it's important that we have that daily attestation, that daily declaration, because frankly, it's one of those things that we have to be able to say that we show a pattern of asking the question, because again, in defense of you, your insurer is going to expect there to be a pattern of risk management that includes the use of such forms. The last thing I want to say about forms is this, and then we'll turn to questions, is that this form is in addition to a standard equine activity risk form that speaks to bodily injury and property damage claims that you might suffer as a participant because you're surrounded or because you're interacting with a 1,000-pound horse. Perfect. This form, which has been around, or variations of it that have been around in the industry for a very long time, need to be signed as well. So the COVID-19 is an additional form. It's not an other form. It's not an alternative to this, because this form speaks to other risks. This form speaks to falling off or the horse kicking you, biting you, getting away from you, being a horse, just all those things that surround the inherent risks of equine activity. The other forms are specific to COVID-19, and that's why we think they're very important at this particular time. So facility managers, horse show organizers, coaches should be getting both sets of forms signed as appropriate, and frankly, keeping those on file for a very long period of time. Someone's going to ask whether or not these forms can be signed electronically, whether or not they have legal standing when they are. The answer we're receiving in most cases is yes. So we're not going to start accumulating and killing a bunch of trees. We're going to start building files in our own database as a business manager to say that Roz was coming to the horse show for 5 days. Here are five forms. They go in a file for the horse show under Roz. And the same thing if Roz was coming for riding lessons, that Roz signed this form every week until COVID-19 was no longer a threat, which might take months. And those forms are available to us. And so the forms, the pattern, the indication that risk management practices, duty of care has been realized. And so we've got records that are real. So that's what I have to say about risk forms. Tried to do it quicker. Anybody that knows me knows I have a hard time doing that. So questions, comments, eggs, tomatoes?
I just want to let everybody know, Mike, thank you very much. That was very informative, and I'm sure there'll be some questions. Just to let everybody know that the last form that was posted, the equine risk form, is on our website now. The other three forms, we had a meeting with Equestrian Canada today, and those were sent to us by both EC and Mike today. So we will have those updated on our website and also sent out to coaches and facility managers and boarding barns, et cetera, that we have in our database, as well as our e-news and any other form of communication that we have. So we'll have that done by tomorrow. So Mike, wondering if you can touch base on the desire for people to hold competitions and a little bit about, I know that you did talk about it throughout your presentation, but specifically on the due diligence on an organizer's part or a facility owner's part on doing traceability and what might be required there for signing in and or signing out as it relates to risk management, along with the desire for people to have some sort of an equestrian event, more for a sense of community than anything else, especially as we do relax with our restrictions a little bit. So just wondering from an insurance perspective, what are the kinds of messages should we be passing on to our members about not getting too comfortable with COVID? Well, and with those of us who we see often in the equestrian community?
Yeah, it's a loaded question a little bit, Heather, and I appreciate it. It's outside of my purview as an insurance person to speak to the health implications of moving too quickly. I would say, and I think all of us would agree, that all of the information we're receiving from around the world, frankly, suggests that even though the governments, in our case in Canada and in Nova Scotia, are allowing us to expand our bubbles a little bit, I don't think there's anyone on the planet that doesn't fully expect there to be another wave, potentially a very serious wave of COVID-19 at some juncture in the not too distant future. Some are projecting the fall when we kind of get into a traditional flu season where we start staying indoors and ventilation issues become a problem. Some are going to argue, well, I'm outside, I'm on my horse. I mean, what could possibly go wrong? I don't know what could go wrong, but that's not really the guidance that we're hearing from regulators and from governments and so on. Mm-hmm. I think the facility managers have to be particularly diligent for a very long period of time. I don't think there's any end in sight, to be frank, anywhere in this country or in fact around the world. What they're doing in the United States and other jurisdictions remains to be seen, whether or not it was the right play. Certainly there's lots of evidence that suggests that spikes occur. They're certainly expecting spikes to happen in our country, even after some of the recent protests and large gatherings that have occurred that were not really anticipated, but are being allowed so people can express themselves. But I think that there's a real danger in moving too quickly. And again, I can't stress this enough, that I think moving forward, all people in business generally should be taking the position that they don't have insurance, that they really do need to be responsible for their own well-being into the future. And by taking that position, hopefully they'll take a more conservative approach to the risks that are very real. Whether or not they have insurance is a question for another day, and who knows when and if that question will be asked of any of us. But the reality is, if we move forward with a conservative view, then we're more likely to do the things that we're being asked to do by government and health. And it's not very complicated. Social distance, sanitize everything, and don't see too many people. And so I don't know how you do that at a horse show. That's my answer.
Okay, thank you, Mike. Do we have any questions from our participants that you might want to ask of Mike while we have Mike live? If not, you can always email them in and we can do our best to get answers for you. But here's your opportunity based on Mike's presentation to ask some questions. So
I have a question if I could, please.
Sure.
I hope Mike is live for a long time. quite literally. I guess I'm in a funny situation because my own facility, I don't have clients coming and going. I have my own horses, so I don't need to worry about that. I, however, travel out to teach. So I go stable to stable. And the risk there, obviously, is taking something from one and being a vector from one to the next. Many of these facilities I go to are private. So I'm going essentially to somebody's private home stable, then I go down the road to the next one. Do you feel it would be wise for me to also include an awareness that the clients know that I'm coming from one, going to the other, and who those, from a traceability standpoint,
yes,
where I've been and where I'm going?
Yes. The short answer is yes. I think any reasonable person, Rosin, you're a bright woman. So the answer is, of course you should, because frankly, that contact tracing might become an issue down the road. I don't know.
I had sort of intended that I would only go to one place per day, but logistically that's not going to work.
No, I know. And how far do you go in terms of being reasonable to protect yourself?
Yes.
You know, honestly, that's number one to me. But then advising people in advance, say, you know, I've been to Mike's barn, I've been to Heather's barn this morning. I certainly have not had COVID-19 symptoms. My temperature seems to be fine. I don't have a cough. I don't have any of these symptoms. But I'm telling you in advance before I arrive at your farm that I'm not coming to you fresh, as a
right.
And I didn't change my clothes and have a shower before I came. I washed my hands diligently, and I'm not going to hug you, and we're going to do all those things that we're being asked to do. I think that's more than reasonable, Roz. I think it's a responsible approach, frankly. And back to Heather's point about contact tracing, I think that is part of the due diligence now. I think that anybody that's inviting people to their premises, or in your case, Roz, going to people's places, inviting yourself effectively to them, is being asked to come by them, puts a heightened measure of risk and liability in place. So we need to, I think you need to have a heightened measure of risk aversion by being forthright. Now, let me ask you the question, since you're on the Zoom call and we're still recording. So what are you doing from a personal protective equipment standpoint as you enter these premises and go from barn to barn to barn?
Well, I haven't started teaching yet. I've okay. not been teaching during this time, but certainly disinfection mask when I'm in close proximity, if I'm in the middle of the ring teaching, and because I wear a headset when I teach, so I can maintain distance. The only people I'm coaching are experienced riders on their own horses with their own tack and equipment. So I will not be providing any tack or equipment. I'm also saying if your horse requires lunging, So in the past, I would often take over and I would do that with the client. Yeah. I'm insisting that they do it. I will instruct them if that's required. The other thing that I'm doing is I am requiring the clients to have a family member there. So not to have a lot of spectators, but particularly if they're a junior, they must have a parent present. So as you said, in the case they fall off, they need assistance. I can verbally give assistance. Somebody can be there to help the horse, but the physical contact with that individual, if it's just a, you know, if I do need to have close contact, I will have gloves and mask, but what will they have? They will have a family member who will have that for them. So that
they're I think that's reasonable. You know, I don't know that we can place the burden, and I'm not a lawyer, Ross, but I don't think you can necessarily place the entire burden on a family member to be that emergency respondent. I think you're responsible, and you know, this is a pro. I mean, the expectation is that you're the one in charge, you're the one responsible, you're the one that's doing, that's created the environment in which the accident potentially took place. So it's your responsibility to get in there and deal with it. But I honestly, you know, I think that's more than reasonable. So that we've got a parent or some other person, if it's a child or even somebody else present, there's nothing wrong with
somebody
that.
From their bubble.
Sure. I think that's a great idea.
That is there, that is present, that, you know, because most of the time, if an incident does occur, it's not catastrophic and they just need somebody to catch the horse or give them a leg up or, you know, that sort of thing.
Yep.
And, you know, so it seems to me that there, if there's always somebody that is part of their bubble that can be part of that interaction that's required in that moment. Yeah. Obviously, if it's a more catastrophic situation, then
911. By the way, COVID-19. You know.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's the other thing. We've talked to coaches about this before, but you know, they still got to remember their fundamental responsibility. And as I've
alluded
to, they are responsible for the environment and its whole
and the safety.
They can't exclude the COVID-19 and just rely upon their previous experience.
Mm-hmm.
The measure of responsibility that is imposed upon them. They've offered themselves out for service. Therefore, they have to be responsible for all of it.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Okay, great. So just to add one further point of interest on the junior client, we highly recommend within our safe sport policy that the rule of two or open and observable environments be exercised. So I'll just add that to another reason why there should also be a parent or another person of majority age present during a lesson. So I'm glad that you
But also trying to limit the spectator so that
absolutely
you know
yeah. absolutely
no, you can bring people who are responsible but not you know, all your friends.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's right. Within due diligence. Okay. So thanks for that question, Roz. And I believe that we do have another question from Lisa. So you go ahead.
Hi. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Lisa.
I have a different kind of situation because I manage a facility that is then rented by groups to host horse shows. So I'm just trying to wrap my head around where all of the responsibility lies in terms of prepping the facility for the group that are paying to rent the facility. At what point do our responsibilities end? Well, maybe not end, but where do things separate? Like in terms of the forms, I can request in a contract that those forms are signed, but we wouldn't, or I wouldn't be, and my staff wouldn't be in a position to be involved in sort of what happens in the office, for example. That would be one thing.
Sure. I it's a good question, Lisa, and I respect the fact that it is complicated as a facility manager.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, and this isn't a great answer, but everybody's learning where that line is in the sand. I would say on a broader level, it's no different than any other liability that you assume by virtue of ownership or management in your case of the land and buildings as you give it over to some tenant. So is it a hazard the potential to hazard of COVID-19 being present, I think that at the very least in your contract, that they should be aware that they too, as an organizer, have an obligation to protect themselves and Hans County Fair Board, or whatever the name is, to make sure that they are exercising due diligence, if they're getting a risk form signed, that they've sanitized spaces. I suppose what you're asking me is, if you hand them the keys and the keys are clean, can you prove that? And the answer is probably not.
Yeah.
But I would suggest then that Hans County has got to come up with their own plan that says, we gave you the key and it was clean. This was our protocol to get to that point where I handed you the key. From that point forward, anything that occurs during your occupancy or tenancy of the property is now your fundamental responsibility. We've done our due diligence. We provided you with a clean spot, clean space. Keep it clean and sanitize it before you leave, knowing that full well that before you rent it out to the next place, you're going to have to sanitize it because it's your responsibility to do so. What we have learned, and again, I'm not an expert in this by any stretch, but what I'm relying upon, frankly, maybe as a naive non-medical person, is that those contact surfaces can only sustain the bug for a period of time.
Yes.
So as long as there's a plan, I suppose, from Hans County that says, look, we're not going to rent the place cheek to jowl. We're going to provide a distance of a certain number of days. We're going to clean, certainly. We're going to clean very thoroughly and perhaps more thoroughly than we've ever done before. But we're going to let time take care of those lingering things that we might have missed. And so that when we hand the key over, we can say in good faith, nobody has used the space in the same way for X number of days. And so we're handing you the keys and they're clean. I don't know how else to protect, at least. I think ultimately, if I attend a horse show that's operated by Roz and it's at your site and I get horribly ill and my wife decides to sue on my behalf, she's suing everybody. She's going to sue you. She's going to sue Roz. She's going to sue the sanctioning body. She's going to sue everybody because that's what she'll do. And so how else can you protect yourself but to say that we have been diligent, we have done what is reasonable as a landowner to prepare the environment before handing the key over.
And even just I'm thinking about sort of a plan as to how horses may move through the barns. Like if, you know, this is an indoor, this is an outdoor. So, you know, we try to minimize a lot of passing in the hallway and stuff in the barns at least. Mm-hmm. But again, that would have to be, that plan would have to be, they would have to embrace that and the users and, or the organizers of the show and ensure that that's followed for that to be effective.
And all you can do is your best. You're not going to be there policing whether or not Roz and I pass in the aisle.
But would there be an expectation that we would have to police it?
No, I'm not a lawyer, Lisa.
I know.
But my response to that would be unreasonable. Yeah. I think if as part of the overall plan and strategy moving forward for the facility, that rules, here's guidance, and that's really what it is from the facility, just as it is from NSCF. Here's guidance that says to mitigate the risk associated with COVID-19, social distancing is a requirement. In the barn, we know we have a challenge. So we're going to put arrows on the floor in the barn. You go in one door, you go out the other door. You don't go in and out the same door. You must maintain social distancing in the barn, knowing that stalls are only an aisle apart. So, you know, if we've got neighbors there, people are going to have to be somewhat responsible for their own actions. But you can do some things to suggest traffic flow. I think that's reasonable.
Yeah.
Some horse show organizers up here who are desperately trying to run events have spent stupid amounts of money building snow fence laneways for horses and, you know, a whole range of things that frankly, just out of urgency to get a horse show run, which I take exception to. But I think, again, very soon, folks generally are going to have to embrace the personal responsibility that comes from leaving their home in the morning.
Yeah.
And eventually courts are going to say, you know what? You got out of bed, you walked out the front door, you knew kind of what was going on. You can't tell this court that you didn't know about the risk associated with COVID-19. If you can say that, I don't believe you. Because, you know, who hasn't heard of it or know how to sort of manage it? Facilities are going to have to be very diligent. Imagine school systems. And we've all watched these videos of teachers trying to map out their classroom, summer day camps where they appear at least, where they're putting circles on the ground for five-year-olds to stay within to play the game. I got a six-year-old granddaughter. That ain't happening. That'll last for about a millisecond, but they're doing what they're supposed to do. They're saying to those participant families, no different with you, participant of the horse show, look, we've done what we've told you what to do.
Yeah.
We've said these are guidances. But here's the thing. I would also say that they're not regulations. They're guidances. You're not a health authority.
Yeah.
You're not the health authority. Health authority is the only one that can sort of, and governments are the only ones that can sort of impose those regulations.
So the health authority has basically said, okay, you can do it as long as you do
that. Under what guidance though?
Yes. And then if we've been cleared to host a show, based on numbers, et cetera, and then we put as facility management puts a plan in place as guidance or as a
framework for the use of the facility.
Framework. Then
you put signs up. Signs are always a great idea.
Yes.
I think I mentioned on this call. I mean, when I go to my local grocery store, there's this lovely little woman whose job I wouldn't want to say, Mike, put on your mask, read the sign, or you don't get a cart.
Yeah.
You know, what a job. But it's just the reality of where we are right now.
Okay. Well, that helps. Thank you.
Okay.
You're welcome. Okay. So I think that this pretty much wraps up our session with Mike this evening. And we have another session next week around the same time, I believe, next Monday night at 7 p.m. for general membership questions, Mike. So we look forward to that.
Okay.
And this evening's guests are welcome to join us for that as well. So, Mike, as always, you're a wealth of information. Thank you. I agree with Roz. Don't ever retire. And we'll be in touch very soon. To ensure that we're all on the same track, because, you know, we're all looking forward to moving forward as much as we can in a slow and meaningful way. So your guidance is appreciated. And we look forward to providing all this information to our membership in the coming days.
So, awesome.
Thanks to everybody who participated tonight, and take care, and we'll be in touch soon.
Thank you, Heather.
Thank you, everybody.
We'll talk soon.
Thanks.
Take care.